As we think as marketers about how to adjust to the new world of AI and AI transformation, perhaps no other industry has a more unique challenge than healthcare. Healthcare marketers have always had to deal with interesting and more complex challenges around data, compliance, and privacy. But the most innovative healthcare marketers are thinking about how do they weave through these challenges and take advantage of the unique opportunities that digital and AI transformation enable. Today, I'm really excited to be joined by two leaders in healthcare marketing to talk about how they're approaching the world of AI and adopting both their marketing strategies and the patient experience at their organizations to take advantage of these new technologies. First up, we'll be speaking with Jess Stewart from Christus Healthcare, based out of Texas, along with Drew Lanemeyer, who's the Chief Marketing and Communications Officer with Tufts Medicine, based out of Boston. You'll hear more on this session of the Modern Revenue Executive podcast around how Jeff and Drew are adapting their teams, their strategies, and their patient experience to take advantage of the latest that AI offers and how to elevate their businesses into the future. So look forward to this conversation and thanks for joining us.
This episode is brought to you by Invoca. When marketing meets AI meets human conversations, revenue happens. Invoca's platform gives marketing, sales, and customer experience teams complete visibility into the buyer journey, from click to conversion, creating better experiences that drive real revenue results. Discover how modern brands are scaling revenue at Invoca.com.
All right, Jeff, Drew, great to see you both today. Great to be reunited. I've had the fortune of knowing both Jeff and Drew for quite some time. And fresh off the backs of HCIC this week, I'm sure you guys have both lots of great insights and observations to share about the industry. I thought maybe to start, maybe first with Drew and then with Jeff. Drew, do you mind sharing a little bit about Tufts as an organization, what you all do there, and then Jeff can do the same in providing us a little bit of background and context on Christus?
Absolutely. And it's great to see you again, Greg, after so long. Tufts Medicine is an academic health system in Boston, primarily centered around an academic medical center in downtown Boston. We have two community hospitals that have two campuses each, and we're building a brand new behavioral health hospital. So it's small in comparison to our other academic health system competitors within the Boston marketplace. But we have about 11,000 employees, and you know, it's a very robust system, but you know, we're really a new health system. It was a holding company before under an organization called WellForce, and we came together as a unified system under Tufts Medicine about 2 years ago. So we're at the early stages from developing our brand and establishing ourselves as a force, a healthcare force within the Boston marketplace.
All right, great. And Jeff?
Yeah, awesome. So Christus Health is a nonprofit Catholic health system based here in Dallas, Texas, with operations throughout New Mexico, Texas, Louisiana, as well as internationally in Mexico, Chile, and Colombia. We have over 600 care centers worldwide. We work with over 15,000 physicians. We have over 51,000 associates. And, you know, we started in 1869 when our sisters landed in Galveston and San Antonio, here to care for the people and the communities throughout Texas. And again, we've expanded to really continue that mission throughout our service areas.
Yeah, that's great. And one of the things that's just, again, for the audience is useful to know is both Jeff and Drew have long histories marketing and healthcare. I always like to say healthcare marketers have a higher degree of difficulty than marketers in many other different industries because the level of complexity in the models, the level of focus around privacy and compliance. And so you guys get extra gold bonus points for driving forward innovative marketing in a world where you have a little bit more constraints than the typical average Jane or Joe marketer. But I thought we'd start by, you know, thinking about kind of the transformation in patient experience around healthcare. There's been a tremendous amount of focus on digital and more digital experiences. Certainly that was something that was really driven forward during COVID a few years ago. Jeff, maybe if you start by talking a little bit about, you've been at Christus 5 years, some of the work that you all have done to really build that concept of a digital front door for the patients that you're serving.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when I look at the challenges 5 years ago to where we are today, what we've really worked on is the foundation of the data that we need to be able to serve our patients, because that's ultimately, that is what fuels the front door It's about care selection. It's about finding the physician in with the right specialty in the right location who's able to really care and treat you for the things that you need. And so, you know, and that was difficult across a system as complex as ours. You know, inside of our we had a, if you will, a centralized medical staff database, but it actually consisted of 26 table spaces representing 26 different medical staffs that all had various bylaws that created significant variances in how we let our consumers know what physicians treat what and where they treat it. And so, you know, we were really on a multi-year journey. It took almost 4 years to get us to a place where we're comfortable with that data. We can get that data on the website. We can syndicate it to our call centers. We can syndicate it to our apps. We can make sure that it's accurate in our Google Business listings, Apple listings, Waze, all of those. And so with that, that really helps us make sure, you know, I think digital front door implies a single point of entry. I mean, it's a useful analogy, but it really is, it has the wrong implications for how consumers actually access us, which is across the board in all kinds of different ways and really in different ways in different times. And they look at the provider over here in one place and on the website, but then they see them on Facebook or they see them in Google. So how do we make sure that that data experience is consistent so they can really make an accurate choice that they are comfortable with and they find to be accessible and reliable?
Yeah, it's interesting. I know as I've gotten into healthcare, I certainly, maybe it's better, more aptly called the digital front doors and rather the front. But the thing that I didn't really get as somebody who tends to come and think about technology a lot is I didn't fully understand all the complexity and sort of the back end, the physicians, the clinicians, all the places of how do you get access to all the data from all of those folks? How do you, you know, I always thought like, you know, booking an appointment online with a healthcare provider, it's kind of like building a Calendly type product. Like you just connect the calendar to the digital front door, voila, you're done. And I didn't realize all of the backend operational work that really has to be done around connecting to the various different systems that the backend folks use about getting them to opt in terms of providing calendaring information. Like there's a lot of organizational transformation stuff that I really underestimated in that world too.
You're absolutely right. I mean, visit types range in the thousands in an organization our size. And even within a single visit type, there are still in our organization wide standards on how long a specific visit type will take. And so that really creates tremendous complexity in trying to serve a list of appointment availabilities to a consumer at the time that they're asking for it. Because they don't want to answer 15 questions to be able to find out what 5 appointment times we have available. They want to know what appointment times that we have available and then answer the questions, which is the sort of standard way. And that's just, it's really difficult to adjust our operational systems to be able to deliver that consumer expectation.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then Drew, I know you've been with Tufts for a year, coming up on a year. Let me give you a little bit more time to get your work done. Where's the focus been for you in year one with the teams that you're working with?
You know, it's really just rolling up my sleeves and understanding the complexity of the organization. As you can imagine, they're not used to working together, all the different entities and divisions, as well as the physicians and systems, you know, and understanding the ownership of all those backend systems. And are they really harmonizing? Are we creating a frictionless system for consumers? Are we providing just a robust opportunity for the learned, for the scientific community to find, whether it's case studies or research or clinical trials? And it's been a challenge because I think we've done a very good job focusing on the consumer. But I think we're also falling short in terms of expectations of our clinical leadership and our physicians in terms of how to elevate our clinical and academic preeminence. But again, it's building relationships within the organization. We have several new leaders that have also onboarded within the health system. So it's establishing those relationships, new ideas and backgrounds that all these different individuals are bringing to the organization. And then how do we build a better front door? You know, I mean, I hate to say it, it sounds so archaic, you know, because it's not literally a front door. And like you said, Greg, it's multiple doors. And we have to meet the patients and clinicians for those referrals where they are. And as Jeff had indicated, you know, we can't throw up blocks or hurdles or going through too many check the boxes to filter. You know, to me, it's almost like the modern day version of calling in a call tree and, you know, press 1, press 5, press 7, and then you end up not getting what you want. And then you got to start all over again. There's nothing more frustrating than that. So really, we're at the beginning stages of the journey, and I'm very thankful that my organization isn't as big as Jeff's to deal with the complexity, but still, the complexity is there. And as you can imagine, there's a number of different experts and expert opinions within an organization. And really, it's how do you build that consensus? How are you that convener that are bringing all these different interested parties together to create solutions that do harmonize all the different systems and the data?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because as I look across industries, I feel like one of the trends I see is a lot of companies have spent, frankly, the last 5-10 years building that digital front door or front doors. That's, you know, a website, more self-service capabilities, a mobile app, a variety of different things in that front. And then there's just been this whole new wave of technological change that has come in over the past year or two. It's a little bit like, hey, can I have a break to sit back and enjoy the fruits of my work in digital transformation before the topic of AI transformation sweeps through? And I know, I have to imagine this is top of mind for you both, having been at HCIC earlier this week. But maybe first down to break it down, because I think even people are not realizing AI is impacting sort of discovery. AI is impacting how people actually engage with you and learning more about the hospital systems, the offerings. AI is certainly impacting how physicians interact with their patients. Maybe to start at the top, sort of the ChatGPT, Perplexity, Claude, Google AI mode world. For you all as marketers, what things are you starting to do? Are you adjusting to make sure that potential patients can learn about your organizations in these new worlds through these new paths?
I think it's really interesting because in my experience with several health systems, healthcare was behind on search engine optimization by, I mean, almost a decade in some cases. And they kind of came to realize after there were almost insurmountable gains made by other directory listing sites that actually the healthcare brand sites really should be part of those search results. And they spent a lot of time and energy clawing their way back up. I mean, that's been a big part of, you know, Drew and I's previous tenure together at another health system, and here at Crisis, it's very much the same. And so I feel a real sense of obligation that we don't fall behind on generative engine optimization, or GEO, and to figure out where we are. But at the same time, I feel like we're just repeating history, because it's a lot of the kind of hacky gray hat, black hat kind of stuff that we see there's a little bit of an edge, and so everybody jumps on it. Look, Reddit's popping up. Post on Reddit. And then, you know, oh no, it's Wikipedia. Post on Wikipedia. And there's just this constant, feels like we're constantly in these short-term game things. And I want to think that we could take the lesson that we've really learned over the last 20 years in SEO, which is to do what's right for the consumer, provide them the information they need to support their decision, and structure it well, and make it easy for the consumers to read, access, and understand. And then ultimately, that will pay off for you. But I don't know that we have that promise of that yet, in part because of the diversity of platforms. You could extend Google a little bit of trust because you could see over time they were refining the algorithm to take out the hacky stuff and get to a place where we were in a really good shape, that it was ultimately consumer-driven information that drove you to the top of the list until AI came out. And now we're kind of starting over again. So what we continue to look at here at Crisis is, how can we improve our consumer journey and get that to syndicate into or to be available for citations in those important engines? And where too, right? So where are the consumers accessing that? Is it very early care? Is it in discovery of, you know, when should I be worried about a pain in my elbow? Or, you know, what are the kinds of surgeries that I might have to be thinking about? Or is it later with who is actually going to treat this? Or moreover, what are the best cardiologists? What are the best elbow surgeons in my area? Who are they? But what could be interesting about this, I really think of, is, you know, AI is actually supposed to be semantic in that it really understands the kinds of things that you need to actually make a decision. And so we think about, you ask a search engine, what are the 5 best elbow surgeons in my area? It goes to a listicle to find the 5 best surgeons and returns 10 listicles on the first page of, here are all the listicles about best surgeons. But AI may actually take the time in the long run. I don't think we're there in the short run, but we look longer term. AI may actually take the time to understand, well, what does best mean? How do I define best? And, you know, today we rely on a bunch of quality metrics that are totally impenetrable to the consumer, right? Consumers do not understand what our internal quality metrics, what our industry reported quality metrics mean. They don't know what Leapfrog underlies the Leapfrog data. They don't know Care Connects and all these other ones. And we do use a bunch of data that just doesn't make sense to the average consumer. But the AI may actually be able to translate that and understand it and actually start to look at, well, what does best represent? And how do I access that information about those particular elbow surgeons or about those particular hospitals and how they've reported quality metrics and how quickly they discharge people and how often they have surgical site infections and all of those things to actually maybe approach to be able to say, well, these are actually the best in your area that also accept your insurance and also meet your criteria that you're looking at in terms of how far you'd be willing to drive and those kinds of things. And really, they should, the AI searches over time really should deliver a better care experience. And so I think we're trying to figure out, how do we continue to structure our data? How do we continue to structure our website? And how do we continue to build the narrative around the website? Because it's not just about the brand. Because, you know, AI over time should also learn to be skeptical of what's on a brand website. How do I find independent verification that says that this is all true about what I'm seeing on the brand? I don't think we're seeing maybe 10% of that right now. But I think in the long run, that's where AI has got to get, because that's what it's been promised for us to be and what we know the language models are trying to put together. So I think that's what we're trying to figure out here at Christus is, how do we begin to influence, yes, our brand and all those things around it, so that we're actually making sure that the quality, the reputation, the legacy that we have at Christus is in all of those places, so that as it becomes discoverable and synthesizable to an AI, it ends up in front of a consumer at the right time when they need to make a decision.
Jeff, it's funny, actually, from personal experience, the best, and what does the best mean? Perfect example I hadn't thought of until you said it. I need new contact lenses. The other day, I was looking around for a best eye care physician near me, and I was looking at ratings, I was looking at geography, ended up calling three of them. They had no availability for new patients until April. And so, like, suddenly, my definition of what the best meant very much changed in terms of who's got availability between now and January 15th. And if you think about, you know, this idea that technologists talk about of AI agents of going out and poking around looking for you, if I could have given more instructions around, well, like in for this particular care treatment, which I would characterize as a relatively low risk where my quality bar is not as high as, for example, some other much more significant healthcare procedure, you know, like my quality bar may go down a little bit, my availability bar may go up a little bit, and my location geography may change. That best definition could very much differ from treatment to treatment to treatment, even if I'm looking at Christus for all three of the different types of treatments I'm thinking of. So yeah, that's an interesting angle of what is the best world? What does the best mean in a more AI, you know, oriented world in the future? Drew, what have you been thinking about from sort of this evolution into more of an AI world, right as you get in your comfort level around, you've got your digital front door stood up?
It's a couple of things that I think being new to an organization and a new health system is really, I've set priorities with the team. I'm really focusing on people, priorities, process, and technology. And really, I view AI as an opportunity to level the playing field. Because as you can imagine in Boston, when you're going up against Harvard Medical School and Mass General Brigham, you know, they have 13 hospitals. It's a much bigger system than ours. And this allows us the opportunity to equal that playing field. However, it really relies upon the team to emphasize the education of AI to our physicians, our physician leaders, our operations team. And I use that as an example, primarily because we have about 7% of our physicians have online booking capabilities. You know, we have to increase that because, like you and Jeff had indicated earlier, it's the bots, the agents. We need to be visible. We need to demonstrate our access to patients and families and those that are looking to refer patients. It also means that, you know, we're leaning into other technology. We've contracted with a different organization to provide us with AI content development where we can include our style guide and other resources that really helps us differentiate who and what we are. So we can start to really develop that chunking, you know, ability to highlight, you know, the where we're the best, where we do the most, where we're the only ones. And that really provides us with that opportunity to, like I said, level the playing field. But more importantly, it is just really being that evangelist internally to communicate why this is important for the enterprise to remain competitive in a tremendously competitive environment like Boston. And it's also, you know, you have to allay fears. Coming new into an organization, folks are, of course, very uneasy with new leadership. And, you know, bringing a new tool like this AI organization I brought in. And folks are very generally concerned, many marketers, that their positions are going to be simply eliminated with this type of AI technology. And really, you know, with a small, nimble team like I have, I'm allaying those fears by saying, no, this allows you to focus on the things that you really want to be creative and developing. And there's a lot of block and tackle. And dare I say, it's disposable, you know, content, you know, but it's must-have content that can be developed through that AI technology and that platform, but then still have that humanization and that massaging of that content. I always call it the magic toaster to demystify AI. So it's like, you know, have you put it through the magic toaster? I use the example of comes out as toast. You put the bread in, it comes out as toast. And, you know, if you want avocado toast and I want cream cheese and tomatoes, I have the ability to adjust it and refine it to my unique taste and flavor. So again, it's how we approach it and how we have to change our mindset of technology and AI and how we're adapting. But again, I still think it levels the playing field because, you know, organizations that have 100, 200 plus marketers and communicators, I just left an organization where I had 105 individuals. You know, now I've got a team of 25. It truly is leveling the playing field.
Yeah. One of the other things I think about a lot in marketing too is I feel like the price of creativity is coming down. Like if I think about specifically video production, and I've never been closely involved with video from a brand marketer's point of view. But I think about in the past, like you'd go to an agency, they come to you with a couple of concepts and you could only really kind of flesh out two or three because just the cost and the human effort in those things was so significant. Where now, if you can go use Sora, you can just want to create a half-baked version of the TV ad and relatively low friction. So the price of saying, hey, I want to try Tuft's positioning way to the left. Now I want to try it way to the right. Like, it feels like the cost of creativity to me is coming down, which for an energetic brand or demand-oriented marketer feels like that would be kind of a field day of being able to, and also having the data to test and try new things from sort of the digital age.
I tend to agree with you simply because, you know, it's so easy and the price to compete is so low now. And I feel for a lot of my agency partners because, again, a lot of organizations feel like and they can do it on their own and why do I need an agency? You know, however, you know, I also look at it as an opportunity to use the technology from a speed to market, you know, standpoint. I think there is a position where you do want to have very high-end, very well-branded, you know, campaigns, and whether it's video or, you know, other traditional or non-traditional media opportunities, you know, there's still that opportunity to create something that's unique, that can go viral from a social media perspective. And I think that just opens up new opportunity at multiple different levels in terms of sophistication. So I think you can still have fun with it. But I do think that, you know, the risk and also the reward in terms of where you're making those investments and how professional your brand is coming across, you can still have something that's unique. You can still have something that's innovative. And speed to market is important, yes, but still you have to weigh the pros and cons on both sides of that coin.
I was just saying, I mean, it's great for differentiation. I mean, one of the challenges that we have across healthcare is that there are problems sometimes with using your own associates, using your own physicians in terms of the longevity of the material, right? And so we often rely, when we're making brochures or booklets or things that are going to last a long time, you know, we rely on stock images, and there are only so many stock images in the world, and where there were, of course, until AI. And so now to be able to, you know, especially as these tools get so much better so quickly, you know, we've just in the last couple of weeks, we've been able to take a reference image of our hospital or of our facility or of a location, unique location where we serve, where there are not a lot of stock images, and put people in front of them, right? And so it create people that look like doctors and that are that and enforce diversity constraints that make sense and all of those kinds of things. And so we're able to actually differentiate our facility, know that we have an image that's truly original and hopefully only has 10 fingers, you know, give or take. So, but like, you know, so you gotta stay on top of these things. But, you know, we get just 95% of the way there. And then, you know, we can add a logo to a lab coat, the stuff that the AI is not there for yet, or those kinds of things, and capture the spirit and image of our brand in our facilities, in our locations, without a photo shoot. I mean, we just did this. I completed this for a particular campaign just this earlier this week. And the grand total was 14 cents. Right. And about 5 minutes. And that's just it's just hard to beat that. I didn't have to schedule a photo shoot and get that kind of money and that time and then end up with an actor who really wasn't that good, or a doctor who didn't brush his hair that day. I mean, you know, go on and that all of those challenges are very real. I mean, Drew laughs because that is 100% what goes on. And so to be able to just whip that up for 14 cents in 5 minutes is it's really unbeatable. And it leads to real differentiation, but differentiation really means actually making our brand real for our consumers. And so, you know, Krista's Health is a very clear, compassion, faith-based brand, and that allows us to bring that forward in our own environment and context.
I'd also like to add, I think it's also important how AI has also provided more access to patients, especially in diverse communities like we have in Boston. You know, Tufts Medicine has really invested time and effort to translate, and using AI is a game changer. You know, the cost to translate, the variety, and, you know, the robust content that you're developing on a regular basis in healthcare was cost prohibitive. So then, unfortunately, you were selecting certain, you know, communities and groups that had mass, you know, for you to make the decisions of where you were going to be spending those dollars. Now, you know, you can do it, you know, pennies on the dollar if, you know, you even have to spend the money, you know. So again, I think it also improves the overall patient experience and access to healthcare, and the barriers have been brought down. And I think that is also very positive.
It's so interesting because this is an angle where, when I go back to earlier, like the bar being higher for healthcare marketers than in for other industries, not only is the bar higher, but, you know, the societal benefit of you being able to deliver your services to a broader swath of people is much more profound than a lot of other industries. And it's interesting because as I think about digital, you know, we talked about data-driven personalization. There was sort of an inherent assumption that you could use data to do segmentation and you could get to smaller and smaller and smaller groups of people and more refined to do more personalization. It sort of ignored the fact that on the creative side, there was a cost to content creation and personalization. I can't, you know, I could get to a segmentation of one from a data perspective, but I couldn't get to a segmentation of one from a content creation and cost perspective. And now that as the cost of content and creative is coming down, you can actually get to that level of segmentation. I think, Drew, to your point, if in Boston you all could afford previously to translate materials three times, you had to pick, but what are my top three demographic groups? Well, now as that cost come down, you can maybe get to 20, 30, 40, 50 demographic groups and you're getting, you know, native language content to people where maybe they only have 2,000 members of that audience in Boston, but now you can do that cost effectively. And obviously in healthcare, that's a great example. Maybe as a final healthcare question to ask you all, there's sort of the marketing and the discovery. And then I know neither of you are clinicians per se, but I would just love to hear, as you get into the clinical experience, kind of the website experience to like actual what happens in offices, are there applications of AI that you two are excited about and your colleagues are excited about in terms of transforming, you know, what my interaction is like with a medical professional? And where do you see things going in that world?
Well, you know, if you've been to a clinic or to been to a physician's office that's implemented an EHR recently, you know, that you're starting to have the kind of airline experience where you're looking at their eyes over the screen as they talk to you. And I think that's really one of the biggest challenges, especially, again, our brand is compassionate, is faith-based. And, you know, we talk a lot about how critical the provider-patient interaction is for God's healing presence to actually enter that moment and for our physician, our clinician to be present with that patient and in a time of healing. And a clickety-clack of a keyboard really takes that away. And so I think what we've been most excited about is we've rolled out an ambient listening AI across all of our clinic interactions, obviously with disclosure and confirmation with our patients. But what it allows us to do is push that screen aside, push that keyboard aside, and be there. And it's made a tremendous difference with our patients. And moreover, at a time when clinician burnout is high, we are not generating more clinicians at the demand level that we need. And so it really allows for our clinicians to be A, more efficient, B, more engaged in the care, and C, to be able to see more patients as well. And so this has been really, really important for us to be able to launch that. And we have a similar set of things that are going on with our RNs as well, and with our other providers to make sure that they're helping track progress notes better and all that. So, you know, again, all of this is allowing the tremendous amount of information that needs to get into the EHR to be better summarized and put in the right places. Still has to be confirmed by a human. We have to have a human in the loop. That's all really critical. But we also don't want our clinicians up until midnight entering notes from the day, right? If that's all there and then they can look at it, confirm it, hit yes, and then what's relevant to the patient ends up in the patient chart and they could say yes, distribute, that goes so much faster. And again, puts the provider back in relationship with the patient.
I agree with Jeff. And actually being a patient at Tufts Medicine, you know, we have the ambient listening as well. And it was the first time that I've experienced that. And it was very transformative in terms of the experience with my physician and being new to the Boston market and having a new physician. It made that interaction so much more personal and so much more meaningful. And it actually afforded a lot more time to get a lot more information into the record. And for the physician, just to get to know me as a person. And, you know, what was my healthcare goals? What were the things that were challenging that I was dealing with? And I thought that was really transformative. But I also think that, you know, from a Tufts Medicine standpoint, you know, we work very closely with Tufts University and the School of Medicine. And, you know, we're developing new platforms, new AI custom platforms. And we're looking to transform how healthcare, how research, how clinical trials are analyzed and are brought to the, to, you know, more patients across the health system, if not outside of our health system, within the communities that we serve. So I think there's going to be a lot more transformation in terms of, you know, providing access points to a lot of this, you know, academic care that is so vitally important to the communities we serve, especially if you're dealing with a chronic illness or a loved one who is searching for different tools or pharmacological interventions. You know, it's critically important for how we're advancing healthcare today, and AI is going to really innovate and continue to innovate.
Yeah, you hear a lot of pithy sayings around AI enabling more human connection, which oftentimes I'm a little bit skeptical of, but the ambient listening example that you both cited, I think, is one of the most clear examples of technology enabling humans to focus more on the human relationship. And nothing makes me happier as a patient than hearing, Jeff, what you're saying and knowing the surgeon who's doing my surgery today was not up at 11:30 last night documenting all the notes from their consultations the day before. They got a good night's sleep and they could focus on what's important. Well, to wrap up, two questions I always like to ask folks. I'll start, Jeff, with you around what's, you know, one book or podcast or learning resource you found of interest or inspiration recently? And then number two, on a personal level, from a travel perspective, is there some place that you're interested in going or visiting over the next year or two?
Sure. I'm going to do a quick and try to throw in two books. One that I always recommend, it's my standard recommendation, is The Design of Everyday Things by Donald Norman. I absolutely love every single chapter of that book. And it just, having a human-centered design approach to everything we do. It was written in 1985 or so, long before the internet, and it feels totally and completely relevant to all the digital that we do today. And then second is Both And Thinking. That's my more recent resource by Dr. Marianne Lewis. But, you know, whenever we receive, when we get to a dilemma, we often think of either or, and that's just simply our model is we think both and it really makes, it forces us to come up with such better solutions. It is now either a system or a local. We need to make healthcare and healthcare marketing and advertising today is both system and local, right? And so, and go on and on. So I really love that. And if I could travel anywhere that I haven't, I was thinking about this. I really would probably say Scotland, done Ireland. I love Ireland. I spent a long time in England. I love England. I've actually missed Scotland. So I'd really love to spend some time in Scotland. And my wife would agree. And she's been begging to go there for a while.
Well, in a both and world, you can visit Scotland and stay warm and not be subject to the cold any weather. Drew, how about yourself?
Good question. But I would have to say, and I'm going to plug, you know, my previous organization, Well Beyond Medicine podcast. It was a podcast that I had started with the team to really be a convening podcast of different professionals, whether they're academic, whether they're physicians, whether they're policyholders. You know, was my first Adweek award. But again, it's truly impressive. And it's something that's that very high bar. And it's something that, you know, I am looking to emulate at Tufts Medicine, but it's truly an opportunity for different individuals that have different, you know, thoughts in terms of how to support children and families, which I think is critically important to create a healthy lifestyle, not only for children, but to provide them with those examples that physicians and clinicians and advocates are really, you know, pushing for how we advance healthcare in the modern day. But I also think that, you know, podcasts are critically important in terms of how we're reaching multiple people and micro targeted audiences. So I look at that again as just such a tremendous opportunity for us as an organization and how it can emulate that. So I'm still rooting for my previous organization and the tremendous success that they've had. But I would have to say, it's funny, Jeff, I just got back from Scotland. So I highly recommend you going to that. But, you know, I can recommend several places to taste some incredible scotch. But I would have to say Iceland. You know, I do want to go. I mean, it just sounds like an exotic location. And now that I'm in Boston, I can fly direct. So what better opportunity than to jump on a plane and go to an exotic location that's, you know, not more than 5 hours away.
Yeah, well, that's great. It's always amazing how close those stops are on the East Coast. Well, thank you guys both for the time. As always, great to hang out virtually and chat with you both. Look forward to seeing you again in real life sometime soon. And really appreciate all the insight on everything that's going on with marketing AI on healthcare. So appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you for listening to The Modern Revenue Executive. Links to any resources mentioned in this episode are in the show notes below. If you enjoyed this show, please give us a 5-star review and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.